You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and thank you so much for joining us. We're live, as we are every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, at LATalkRadio.com. You can stream us on your computer. You can listen to us if you download the free apps on your handheld devices or your tablets, and you can download our podcast later each day at MariaSanchezShow.com and TheMariaSanchezShow.com. We appreciate your ears. We have a chance to get into some of the meat of the news stories today. We're closing in on our 10th week of this incarnation of the Maria Sanchez Show. And ordinarily what we do is we cover current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, fun things to do, inspirational stories. Some of them are international, some of them are national, some of them are local. We broadcast from Sherman Oaks. So we are in California. The West is in the middle of a heat wave. So everyone hunker down and be careful. We have a couple things to share with you that we're really excited about that's happening next month. So first of all, one is that I've been honored to be selected to be the Grand Marshal of a motorcycle ride that is all female, all women, and all brands. It's called Heels and Wheels. It's the 8th annual. This is the third time I've been asked to be the Grand Marshal. It'll be the second time that I'm able to do it regarding my schedule, and it's going to be about the fourth time, I think, that I've actually participated in the ride. Those that you may not know, I am a Harley rider. This is the first time I've been without a Harley since 2006, I think it was, that I bought my first one. I started out as a young girl riding mini bikes. I was a tomboy growing up, and while I was always a girl with my patent leather shoes and my dresses to mass on Sundays, when I could, I was an athlete. So I played volleyball, basketball, and softball, and I continued to play volleyball and basketball varsity in high school, and then in college, intramural, and then sometimes I would practice with the basketball team. I went to a non-athletic scholarship school, UC Davis. It is a D1 school now, but when I was there, we weren't. It was like academics were first, athletics were second. If you needed to study, you got no problem to miss practice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I started out riding mini bikes. I bought my own when I was, I think I was pre-adolescent. I was raised in the San Fernando Valley, which is in the Los Angeles area, and we lived across the street from a 10-acre field. And so it was the perfect place to ride this little mini bike. I don't even know what horse it had, probably not even one. My dad had an office in Northridge in the San Fernando Valley that was next door to this lawnmower store that also sold mini bikes. So I saved up my allowance and saved up. I'm a Capricorn. We do that. We're very prudent and frugal with our money. And so I bought this bike and just loved it. And it turned out my dad used to ride motorcycles when he was growing up in Chicago. And he got a kick out of it, too, so he said that he would split the cost with me. And actually, the end of my mini bike was because something was wrong with the clutch. So my dad was taking it down the street to adjust it, and it was not balanced. The gas tank was on the right-hand side, and my dad leaned over on the right-hand side to adjust it, and that was enough to tip the bike. He did a headstand on his chin on the asphalt, the pavement of the street. I witnessed the whole thing, skidder to a stop. I'm, of course, running up to him. Are you okay? Are you okay? I swear to goodness, I'm probably 12. And he's trying to calm me down, even though he's got his knuckles had been street bite and his chin. They had to cut his wedding ring off because his hands were swollen so much from the impact with the asphalt. And that thus ended my mini bike. Now, why it didn't get replaced, I'm not quite sure, but it didn't. So fast forward to high school, my dad teaches me how to ride motorcycles when we would go to visit my mom's family in the state of New Mexico. My mother is outside of a small town outside of Albuquerque, which is where she was raised. Both of my parents speak English as their second language, so I always say that I was raised with an immigrant mentality. Unfortunately, they didn't speak the same language of their mother tongues, so English was what was spoken in her home. And, excuse me, fast forward to now, they always say the reason we didn't speak English, I mean Spanish or German to you, because that's what their heritage was, is that we didn't want you to get discriminated against the way we were discriminated against. And it's like, darn, we could have been trilingual instead of. So we would go to visit my mom's family once a year, my mother being ninth of 10 children. She was raised on a farm. They also had a ranch. They did agriculture. They had livestock. They bartered for most things. There was one outhouse for 12 people, so you can imagine, see, privacy was in short supply. And we got to have that experience every year. So dirt roads everywhere, not a soul to see for as far as you could see. And so that's where my dad taught me to ride motorcycles. And they were Hondas, like 125s, maybe 250s. And so he'd be on one and I'd be on one, and that's how I learned to shift. And that was in the day where you had to stand on the pedal to start the motorcycle. Now you just push a button and it rolls over. So I didn't ride again for decades. And then my marriage was crumbling and the kids were older, and I thought I should find an avocation that was singular in nature and was healthy. Because I was spending a lot of time on my own. My husband was pulling away, and it was like, okay, so what am I going to do? I'm not going to get into trouble. So I went. California has something called the California Safety Federation, and it's a school. It starts out Friday night, and it's in the classroom. You talk about the rules and regulations. You take a test. If you pass that, the written test, then you go Saturday and Sunday, and you actually are on a bike. And this was like a 4-hour Saturday and 4-hour Sunday. I can't remember because it's been so long. So I went and I did that, and I got a 90% on the driving test, which they do on Sunday. And if you pass their test, then the state of California allows you to waive the driving test, the Department of Motor Vehicles, and all you have to do is take the written test, which I did, and I got my license. So I'm like, okay, cool, I'm going to get a bike. And I was only going to get a Harley. I'm one of those folks that when I make up my mind, and I'm not much of a shopper. So I was, announced this to the family, and they're like, no, Mom, no, it's too dangerous. No, no, no. So I listened to my family, and I didn't get a bike. Well, fast forward, the marriage ends. We're divorced. I'm living in a new place. My children are even older and busier, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is my time. So I go to the Harley dealer, Ventura Harley, in Southern California, and I go around, and the sales guy's like, I'm tall. So he says, with legs like that, you can ride anything in this showroom. And I'm like, I don't want to ride anything, and I don't want a big, luxurious bike. I want to feel the road. I'm only going to be taking day trips. I'm only going to be going in the canyons. I don't like riding on the freeways or the highways. So I settled in on a Sportster 1200. And this was like on a Saturday or Sunday, and I said, obviously I want to test drive it, but I haven't ridden since I got certified, which was probably, 5 years earlier than that, and then before that it had been decades. So I said, how about if I do a test ride with you, the salesman, and I'll just sit on the back, and I'll get a feel for how the bike is, or the ride is. And he's like, okay, that's kind of unconventional, but all right. So at that time, I had a morning radio program. I was on the air from 6 to 9 in the morning, and they opened at 10. And so I made my appointment for 10 o'clock, and I show up, and I have, of course, on, boots and jeans and the appropriate attire to ride a bike. They lend me a helmet. And the night before, I said to myself, let's do this visualization. How is it that you ride a motorcycle? First gear is down. The rest of the gears are up, so down with your toe, and then you put your toe underneath that, and you lift it up, and you put in the clutch, and you let it out, and et cetera. And I thought to myself, I can do that. So the sales guy's ready to let me get on the back, and I'm like, nope, I can do it. So sure enough, I get on a Sportster that they have for me to test drive, which you can do that at any time, demo ride. And, they take your insurance information, your driver's license. You sign this waiver that says they're not responsible, of course. And we take off, and I had no problem at all whatsoever. I didn't stall it once. I didn't drop her once. I came back and I was like, okay, I'm ready. And he's like, all right, ready what? And I said, I'm ready to purchase it. I want a Sportster. I want it black. And he goes, we just took delivery of this one. I said, great. That's it for me. No worries. That's all I want. And everyone's like, eyes are like, really? Okay. So that was, and I named her. I don't know why. I just thought, and I would speak to her about her in the female terminology. So I named her Genevieve. And I named her Genevieve because I have one daughter, and that was my choice for a name for her. And I was voted down by her father, my ex-husband, and our three sons. So I always favored that name, and so I thought, well, okay, now I got another opportunity to name. So she's Genevieve, G-E-N-E-V-I-E-V-E. And the backstory is that when my daughter Catherine got confirmed in the Catholic faith, which is the last sacrament that I'm responsible for my children, she chose Genevieve as her confirmation name, which she didn't tell me until she got confirmed, which is a two-year process. They're freshman and sophomore year in high school. And she tells me Genevieve, and I was like all choked up. Like, how sweet is that? So I've got Genevieve now, and she's a Sportster. So let me think. I think I bought her in 07. That was June of 07, and I had an opportunity to go to Sturgis in August of 07. And at the time, I contacted my boss. When I had this morning show, I told you, and I said, how about if I go to Sturgis and I take the show on the road? He is one of the world's greatest bosses that I've ever worked for. In fact, we're still close to this day. And he's like, sure. I don't think there was any idea, no matter how half-cocked or how odd it was, that I would approach him at, that he said no. He always said yes, but I guess when you deliver, you kind of get, you know, some privileges. So, it was a girlfriend of mine. She rides. She has since sold her bike, so she was the only gal that I really know that rode. Her husband and two friends of theirs that I didn't know from Adam. So the five of us took off in this big, huge motorhome with a trailer pulling the five Harleys in it. Now, a lot of people, Sturgis is the world's largest motorcycle rally. There are about 500,000 bikes that converge into this tiny little town of Sturgis, South Dakota, which has a population outside that wild and crazy 2 to 3 weeks in August of 6,000 people. So it's a tradition that's longstanding. I forget what year they're at now, this year, because it's going to happen in August of this year. So because I was going to be broadcasting from there, I had to pick a locale, and this is terrestrial radio, so, you know, in the car kind of radio. So I got the equipment. That was one of the reasons that it worked for me, is because if we were going to ride there on our bikes, I wouldn't have had a place to put equipment, and I wouldn't have had a place to put clothing, because my Sporty was stripped. I didn't have bags or anything. All I did was chrome her up. But so we made this ride. We left Friday after my broadcast, and we pulled in on Sunday, and then we took the equipment. I broadcast from the Buffalo Chip Camp. There are three kind of major venues in Sturgis that have camping and RV facilities and concerts. And the Buffalo Chip Camp is, I think they say it's the third largest city in Sturgis, South Dakota for those 10 days. So you can imagine. And the concerts they have and the acts that they bring one after the other, night after night after night after night, is amazing. You know, Velvet Revolver and ZZ Top and Black Cherry, and I mean, it just goes on, and so do these other two venues. So I was on the air again from 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, West Coast time, so that meant I was Central time there, so that I was on the air from 7 to 10 a.m. at the Buffalo Chip Camp. Now, we were staying in Spearfish, which is outside of Sturgis, because they have an RV park there. So it was about a 30-minute, 30-mile ride into Sturgis every morning. So I'd get up, and I'd get dressed, and I'd get on my motorcycle. And, of course, most people are sleeping because, one, it's early, and, two, it's kind of a party atmosphere. It's like New Orleans Mardi Gras for adult motorcycle riders, and it is a freak show. I mean, the things you see and the way some of the gals dress and the cleavage, and it used to be that the women would flash their tits and then they would get beads like at Mardi Gras with the parades and stuff like that. Well, they decided that they wanted to make it more decent. So they made flashing your breasts a sex crime. And if you're convicted of that, you have to register as a sex offender for the rest of your life. So that put a quick end to those antics, but you gals still will put pasties on to cover their nipples, and so they do that. But it's a little bit more sedate, just a little bit, than it once was. So I would ride into the Buffalo Chip Camp, again, a 30-minute ride. The sun would be coming up. I'd be pretty much alone on the streets getting there, be live from 7 to 10, and then head back to Spearfish, because then the rest of the day I was spending riding with my four other now friends that I had arrived with. Well, it would take me about an hour and a half to get back. And why? Because there was so much motorcycle congestion on the one road back, which is one lane or two lanes each way with stop signs all the way. So you end up walking your bike through town. And then I'd finally get to the group at about 11:30, which they were chomping on the bit to, like, let's go, let's go, let's go. And then we'd spend the rest of the day riding. So that was so much fun. So that was a good initiation for my bike, Genevieve. So flash forward to last year, 2012. One of my motorcycle buddies who has a motorcycle list, because whenever he goes on rides, he sends it out. He calls it his weekend riders. He said that he was going to Sturgis last year, last August of 2012. And I thought, well, sure, why not? So and one of my main reasons in making that decision was because they were going to have a follow vehicle. And what does that mean? That means that somebody's driving a four-wheel, you know, truck or car. And that means that there's a place to put a suitcase. And they had a trailer that would fit two bikes on it in case somebody had mechanical problems. So it was like, wow, this is a dream come true. So I said, yes, I'm in. It was going to be 10 days, 3,600 miles there and back. They said to drop off your suitcases the night before. We were leaving on a Sunday morning, and we were going to meet at an LAPD station here in Southern California at like 8 o'clock. And so I said to my buddy, can I meet you along the way? He's like, sure. So Saturday night, I bring my suitcase, and I meet the man who's got the follow vehicle and who's actually kind of responsible for organizing the ride. He has three brothers, so the four of them were going for the first time in, I think, 13 years had been the last time they had been there. Also former LAPD, retired. And that's the first he knew that of the 10 that were going, that there was a female. So nobody told anybody that Maria was coming along. Just my buddy knew, and he let them know that there was going to be another rider, so there was going to be 10 total. So that was interesting, because I'm like, oh, okay. And he was nice enough and kind enough. In fact, we're still friends to this day, he and his wife. And I go on rides with them when they go, you know, around Southern California on a random Sunday. So the next morning when I show up at the destination place, everyone's looking and nodding. And I hear start this, a girl. And not only is there a girl on this ride, she has a Sportster. Because they all had the big ones. The Dynas and the Fat Boys and the Street Glides and all this stuff, which I don't think anything of it. I mean, you know, my sporty Jenny, Genevieve, she could go 85 miles an hour. Not that I want to, because I don't have a need for speed. And I always explain that to men when I start out with a ride. I don't have a need for speed. I will not go faster than I feel comfortable. I will not ride above my comfort level. And if you want to go and do that, go right ahead. I'll meet you to where we're going to be. So, because I don't want to, you know, rain on anybody's parade and make their experience different than what they want. So we get there, and it's, you know, I don't know, 9 o'clock by that time, and so there's eight of us, because we make one more stop to pick up two more riders, and then we take off. So we go to that next stop, and then, you know, everyone's just standing around, and suddenly they all say, okay, we're going. And being a girl, I have more things to do with putting on my helmet and getting my hair out of the way and taking my ball cap off and taking my sunglasses off and et cetera. So the next thing I know, I'm like ninth or tenth in the ride as we hit the road and we're turning onto the freeway. And the next thing I know, I don't see our lead rider, who was the man, my buddy, that invited me to go. So suddenly, I don't know how to get on the freeway, and I don't know where our next stop is, because I'm just going to ride in caravan with these nine other men. And fortunately, there's a man next to me who I just met that morning at the first stop, and he looks at me and shrugs his shoulders, and I look at him and shrug my shoulders, and he kind of indicates follow me, and so I do, and we get lost. He doesn't know. I don't know. So he yells at me, if you need to stop, let me know. And we're going a little bit, and my low fuel light goes on, and I point to my gas tank, and he nods his head, and we pull over. And so first of all, we're lost. Second of all, it's hot. We're headed towards the desert, and it's a Sunday in August, and so I'm perspiring. I've got copious amounts of adrenaline flowing through my system because of all those factors. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I know that we were going through Las Vegas. I don't know. Our first stop was out of state. I don't know where that is. I do know how to get home. So I guess if I need to, I'll turn around after I get gas. So he and I stop for gas. Fortunately, he's older than I am, and he is pissed off. He is upset. You're never supposed to leave anybody, ever. There's a code of ethics. There's a code of honor amongst riders. Until you see the last one, you don't get on the freeway. You don't go anywhere. So we're filling up, and we're talking about what are we going to do. And then, lo and behold, miracle of miracles, there's the follow vehicle. They're getting gas at a station across the street. Like, oh. So they come up to us, and they say, what happened? We tell them. They're like, okay, we'll lead. You guys follow. So we get to our first stop. And I'm perspiring like you can't believe because the temperatures are now at least 100. I'm in full leathers. That's how I always rode, with chaps and a leather jacket and then, a full helmet. That's how I always rode, too. And my hair is just matted to my head, and I'm perspiring, and I'm really unhappy because everything that I was told wasn't going to happen had happened in the first segment of our ride. So from that point forward, I didn't have anything more to do with the man that had invited me. And again, we're buddies. We weren't dating. We had dated years ago, but we have stayed friends since. And I just say to the follow vehicle, I'm going to follow you. And that's the sum total of it, because I know I can trust them. So that's how the journey began with Maria and her Harley ride. So we do make it to Sturgis. We do stay like 3 days in Sturgis. I've been to New Orleans and Mardi Gras during the time. It's nice, but I'm not into crowds. I've been to Sturgis before. It's nice. I'm not into the crowds. I didn't want to go into town. I didn't. I went one night with them, which is less crowded, but that was it. The beauty of that whole experience is the rides around that area. We went to Mount Rushmore, which I've been to now twice, and Devil's Tower, and there's all kinds of amazing sights to see. So that's just a fabulous event. And then we came back. So it was 3,600 miles, 10 days on my Sporty. I get back, and the guys are like, Rant, you really got to get a bigger bike. And I was like, I don't really want a bigger bike. No, nope, you got to get a bigger bike. So they go with me to the dealership, and I had never ridden anything other than my Sportster. So they say, you should try this and this. And so they think a Street Glide would be good for me. So these are four of the guys that I went on the ride. They adopted me like I was their kid sister. I was the second youngest rider in the group, and again, the only female. So I ride the Street Glide, and it's great. You know, it's a big bike. It's more than I wanted, but it's, you know, I can see how it would make the ride better. And it's got all these things, including a windshield and bags that you can put stuff in, and a sound system and fairing and all this stuff that doesn't run six gears, and you know, all great. So they say to me, don't take the first offer that's offered to you. And I said, I'm not buying a bike. And they said, just don't take it. So they offer me this price, and I said, you know what, we're going to go to lunch, and then we're going to discuss it and come back, which is what I was told to say by the guys, right? And one of the guys, Joe, who's leading this whole brigade, says to me, Maria, we need to talk. So we go into the middle of the dealership. So keep this in mind. There's four men, my mentors, and me, and we're in a huddle, like a football huddle, and he says to me, take it. And I said, I didn't come to buy a bike. I came to test drive a bike. And he goes, take it, Maria. It's a fabulous offer. So I took it. So now I have Genevieve and Genevieve 2, which they dubbed G2. And I ended up selling Genevieve to a fellow Rotarian who is enjoying her tremendously and continuing the pleasure of keeping Genevieve as her name. And now I've got G2. I put 1,000 miles on G2 in the first month that I owned her, took several trips, got active in the Harley Owners Group, or HOG, here in Southern California. And then winter hit, and I didn't ride her. And every day I was looking at her and thinking, what a waste. She's just sitting here. She's not being enjoyed by anybody. And I forgot to mention in this whole thing, I have a wicked, steep, awkward, curvy, big bump at the bottom driveway that I drop G2 six times getting up to the driveway and up to my garage. So now every time I would get on G2, I was filled with trepidation, anxiety, and a lot of adrenaline, which was no fun, not a great way to start a ride, and a worse way to end one. So I finally decided she was more than I needed. She was bigger than I wanted. So I sold her in April. I was lucky to sell her. So I am without a bike for the first time in as many years as, what, so 06 to 13, 7 years. But that's not stopping me from being the Grand Marshal for this 8th annual Heels and Wheels. So that was a long way to say, please join us. It's Sunday, July 14th. It is all women, all rides. And we would like to have this be a record breaker in terms of attendance. $10 out of the registration fees goes to the Breast Center of Community Memorial Hospital, which provides exams and procedures to women in need. Registration before July 6th is $30, and after that, it's $40. That includes, they have donuts and coffee in the morning with registration. You get a T-shirt, you have the ride, you get a lunch, and there's a raffle. So 8:30 is check-in, kickstands up at 10 a.m., and I am honored and privileged and pleased and so happy to be the Grand Marshal. And so you can get that information at VenturaHarley.com. We're going to put a portal on our website as well so that you can click there, and it'll take you to Evite where you can register. And then we have another event, and 2 days later, on it's Girls Night Out. It's Tuesday, July 16th. It's for the production, it's opening night of Spank, the 50 Shades parody, which is a play on the book 50 Shades of Grey. The author in 50 Shades of Grey has nothing to do with this. It's not authorized by that, but it has been on tour, and it's coming to Southern California. So July 16th is Girls' Night. Also, if you can make it, I'll be there, of course, and our listeners will be there. We hope that you'll show up. You will get a 15% off of the ticket price, which the tickets are going for $39 or $49, if you enter the promo code Maria, M-A-R-I-A. So there's going to be a no-host pre-show cocktails. There's going to be the musical, and then after you get to meet the cast. And that website is spanxshow.com. We'll also have another portal. So you're getting this information as it's being revealed on our website at mariasanchezshow.com later today. But we wanted to share that with you. So if you can't make Girls' Night, you can still get 15% off if you use the promo code Maria for the ticket price. So there, you get something for listening. So our one and only guest this morning, and as I've said, we're going to get it into the news, and we have the luxury of reveling in it and not having these deadlines is happening, is Linda Daly. She will go into her history, but she's the adopted daughter of Nancy Daly and her first husband, who was CBS executive Robert Daly, who is now married to singer-songwriter Carol Bayer Sager. She wrote a story called The Last Pilgrimage, My Mother's Life and Our Journey to Saying Goodbye. So we're going to be speaking with her in just a little bit. And one of the reasons is, one, because the story is inspirational. Two, because it's also a local story. Three, because it transcends, because it talks about disease and cancer. She had she was trying to beat cancer and didn't. But the other thing is that we all have a story within us, and whenever we can, we try to inspire, put it to writing, and make it happen, because the world's a better place by learning from others' examples. So what the fallout is that I can determine from the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday and their rulings, which I shared with you yesterday that I'm all for what those decisions were, they're saying that all nine of their justices let us know that either they would never be willing or they're not yet ready to cut off state-by-state legislations and the debates that need to happen in those states that do not allow same-sex marriage, which I think actually is the way it should be. They don't want to dictate to us. They don't want to be too far ahead of the country. They want us to have that dialogue, us to go through the scrutiny, us to create legislation, us to eventually pass it, so that it's not being dictated to. It's kind of organically. So since there are 13 states now that are allowing same-sex marriage, and once California, that finally happens, they're saying that that represents 30% of the population of the United States will be covered by a state that does recognize same-sex marriage, even though 30 states still do not recognize that. So I think what they did, in my humble opinion, is that they allowed us the dignity to have that discourse, to have that discussion, which when you, and that's what we endeavor to do on this program, is not have a confrontation, not have people stepping on each other, not have voices being raised, not having somebody get cut off, but to give you information in a way that you then can either make your own decision, get empowered, have more knowledge, find out more for yourself, and make a better choice. Because I think knowledge is power. And so when you have more tools with which to make a decision, ultimately that decision should be a better one than one that's just a knee-jerk one. So I can't say how much I appreciate the Supreme Court on doing that. One, with the Defense of Marriage Act, where now in any state that recognizes same-sex marriage, those benefits will be allowed to them, and telling everybody that those marriages are valid and worthy of federal recognition. And then the Prop 8 one, by kicking it back to the state of California, both yesterday, Governor Jerry Brown and Attorney General Kamala Harris said that they are not going to step in the way of that, and that hopefully the Ninth Circuit won't take as long as a month, but if it does, oh well. So that means that marriages will be happening within the month, same sex. So next week we're going to have on a county clerk and recorder to talk to us about what that's going to involve. But everybody's been, one, because it's summer, and two, because it just went down yesterday, they've been otherwise unavailable. So kudos to us. Today, President Barack Obama said from Senegal that he is going to keep to the routine channels in his efforts to bring the NSA leaker Edward Snowden back for prosecution. His quote is, "I'm not going to be scrambling jets to get a 29-year-old hacker." Meanwhile, Ecuador has said that they have not yet dealt with Snowden's request for asylum because he's not in their country, because apparently somebody has to be in the country in order for them to consider that request. They also have denied statements that Ecuador has given Snowden refugee documents to travel on. The Russians are suggesting it's time for him to move on. Russia says it has no interest in arresting him. The United States has called on any country where Snowden may travel to turn him away. And here they keep talking, he's either 29 or 30. I should actually look up his birthday, because just this week they started saying different things. I've got this one story in my hand, and they call him 29 and one and 30 in the other. So response to Snowden's asylum application could take as long as 2 months. That came from Ecuador yesterday. And an Ecuadorian deputy foreign minister denied yesterday previous reports that the nation had given Snowden documents to facilitate his travel. They said it's not true that he has an ID, passport, or any document given to him by any Ecuadorian consulate. And their quote is, "It is possible that he may have letters of recommendation or references, but from our side, the foreign ministry, we have not provided any document, as is being reported by some media outlets." And also Hong Kong, which the United States is upset with by not retaining and extraditing him, said that they asked for clarification and didn't get it, and that's why they did not. So other people are saying, well, this is Hong Kong's way of dragging their feet so that they didn't have to get involved. White House spokesman Jay Carney called the decision a serious setback to U.S.-China ties. But Hong Kong's top prosecutor said U.S. officials failed to respond to a request for further information, leaving authorities there unable to arrest him. So the reason is because there were three names that were used, and Hong Kong asked for the government, our government, the U.S. government, to clarify. They said the Hong Kong immigration records listed Snowden's middle name as Joseph, but the U.S. government used the name James in some documents and referred to him only as Edward J. Snowden in others. So Hong Kong said, these three names are not exactly the same. Therefore, we believe that there was a need to clarify. Authorities failed to provide Snowden's passport number also. Official received the arrest request on June 15th and sent a request June 21st for clarification. 2 days later, without any information from the United States government, Snowden flew to Moscow. So up until the moment of Snowden's departure, the very minute, the U.S. Department of Justice had not replied to the request for further information. So the quote from their representative says, "Therefore, in our legal system, there is no legal basis for the requested provisional arrest warrant. In the absence of such a warrant, the Hong Kong government has no legal basis for restricting or prohibiting Snowden leaving Hong Kong." So apparently he's still at that holding center in Russia, but Russia's wanting him to go now too. I cannot imagine the pressure that this kid's got on his shoulders. But Steve Wozniak, who is the one that basically created our access to the internet, which existed but regular people didn't have it, has called him a hero. And he says he's more than a little distressed that the technology he helped develop nearly four decades ago is being used on a massive scale to invade people's privacy. His quote is, "He's a hero to me, to my beliefs about how the Constitution should work. I don't think the NSA has done one thing valuable for us in this whole PRISM regard, and that couldn't have been done by following the Constitution and doing it the old way. I don't think terrorism is war. I think terrorism is a crime. And by using the word war, we've managed to use all these weird ways to say the Constitution doesn't apply in the case of a war. And I think Edward Snowden is a hero because this came from his heart. And I really believe he was giving up his whole life because he just felt so deeply about honesty, about spying on Americans, and he wanted to tell us." So he goes, he was appearing, Steve Wozniak was appearing in Detroit at a conference that was with the Ford Motor Company called Go Further with Ford. It's a trend conference. And Wozniak had participated in a panel discussion titled Disrupting the Drive. So listen to this about what is that. That conference focuses on the development of automobiles at Ford and other car makers that will be able to monitor a driver's heart rate and blood sugar level, choose their favorite music, set their alarm clock from work, getting that information from the cloud. So more invasion. If you weren't thinking that we had privacy before, we've got none now. That's what I always tell my kids. There's nothing private. I don't care if you delete it or if you dump it, whatever, it exists. So now we're privileged to speak with Linda Daly about her book, The Last Pilgrimage, My Mother's Life and Our Journey to Saying Goodbye, which is readily available.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. Good morning. You're on the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us.
Happy to be here.
We appreciate your time. And just give us, I shared with the listeners a little bit about your background, but why don't you share that also about your adoption with your mom and her husband and your life thus far, because you've had quite the extraordinary experience.
Yeah, it's been pretty great. I was adopted when I was 9 months old. I was in foster care before that. My teenage birth mother gave me up, knowing that I would be better in another home. I believe that she had an abusive situation, so she felt it was best to put me up for adoption. So my Nancy, my mom, and my father, Bob, didn't think they could have children. So they adopted me, and I think I was the catalyst for then for my two brothers who came along shortly after that.
Naturally.
Yes, naturally.
You hear those stories all the time. Isn't that something?
I know. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So your journey then, your mom and your dad were married for how long?
My parents were married for 30 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then your dad has gone on to remarry and to famous singer-songwriter Carol Bayer Sager. And I understand that they hosted your book launch party last month.
They did.
How
they
nice.
Did.
That was nice.
It was, yes, it was wonderful. I mean, Carol is an extraordinary woman. She and my mother were actually very close towards the end of my mom's life. Carol ended up taking my mom to chemo a bunch of times and created a song list for her while she was in chemo. She played, I have an extraordinary family, and, you know, everybody, we all circled around my mom towards the end. Everything was a group effort.
And then your mom remarried our former mayor, Richard Reardon. And
yes, it did.
And then that marriage ended also, as I recall.
Yes, it did.
So then she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2006, and that's kind of where your books takes place from then and what she did?
Yes.
And what made you want to write something about your mom, Linda?
Well, my mother was an extraordinary woman. She was an incredible role model, not only for me, but for many women in Los Angeles. She changed laws for foster children. She made adoption easier for foster kids. She was just a really remarkable human being. And the experience that I had with her that last week of her life was unlike anything any of us had experienced. And I felt to have a tribute to my mother, and also a chronicle for my children in case they ever had questions, was really the right thing to do. You know, this story starts out in Los Angeles, but then ultimately we end up in New York the last week of her life, when she's looking for a miracle cure for her pancreatic cancer from the Brazilian faith healer John of God. So when she was not well enough to fly home, that was when my two brothers flew to New York to meet us, and we rented an RV and started our drive home. But unfortunately, she didn't make it, and she died in St. Louis.
Oh, my goodness. And so did the three of you were in the motorhome, the RV, along with your mom?
We were. It was the three of us.
Wow.
And the nurse that that I brought with us, with my mom to New York. So, yeah, it was quite a group.
And a different version of what we think of road trips.
Yes, it was.
And then this, she also had her own spiritual metamorphosis in her life. Did that just happen after she got diagnosed with the cancer in terms of rejecting her Catholicism and converting?
You know, she was always interested in finding a higher power and finding answers to things. So she had consulted psychics, mostly for the fun of it. But, you know, when Western medicine just wasn't kind of, you know, wasn't fixing the cancer, and she decided to stop all treatment, she then went into alternative medicines and alternative methods. She had a reflexologist come. She had two healers come who none of us really liked very much. We found them to be a little oppressive and strange. But she was always open to anything to help her spirit and to help her body. You know, she never said no to different treatments. She just, you know, she was always interested in finding a different way.
And then, but she chose Judaism to convert to.
I did.
Oh, you did. You did.
I did.
Ah.
Yes.
So you were raised Catholic.
Yes, I was raised Catholic, as were my brothers. But, you know, I had major problems with the church. It wasn't a religion that I felt comfortable questioning God. And especially when my mother, who was such an extraordinary philanthropist and someone who just gave herself over to helping others, why God would be taking her away was unconscionable as far as I was concerned. So, but being a Catholic, I found it difficult to question those kinds of motives. And being a Jew, where everything is really based on questioning and understanding and studying, it was much easier and much more comfortable for me.
So your metamorphosis then happened after your mom passed away?
It started before then. I think that religion had always been an issue for me. I'm naturally curious. I always want an answer to something. And, you know, being a Catholic growing up, where you just need to, just accept it,
mm-hmm.
and have this faith that at the end of your life you're going to be in heaven, wasn't enough for me. So, you know, it started when I was young, but my first husband, who's the father of my children, when I was pregnant with my first, we decided we were going to raise the children Jewish, so that's when I converted.
I see. And what was that like?
it was the most liberating, wonderful experience, because here I was in front of these, you know, Torah scholars and these incredibly bright men who, you know, were open to any question I had about God and about the Torah and about life as a Jew. Everything was answered. And it was a wonderful intellectual pursuit that I relished every time I got together with the rabbi with whom I converted.
And what sect or of Judaism did you convert to, or kind?
Reform.
Okay. That seems the most realistic to me, too.
it worked very well, yes, for me.
It seems like you have the tenets and you have the traditions, and then you also have the acceptance of modern-day life.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then in terms of honoring your mom, how did you go about it? I'm always fascinated that people have, you know, intention and then they actually do it. Because I'm a proponent that we all have a story within us, at least one. And then you actually have it between a hardcover and it's available everywhere.
I know, it's pretty great. You know, like I've said, having this woman as a role model and really... When I look back on all of the progress I've made in my life, it's been due to my mom. I wouldn't be here if she couldn't have gotten pregnant. You know, and I was placed with this family that is so extraordinary and loving. And, you know, there never a day went by where I wasn't 100% member of the family. And, you know, she opened so many doors for me and showed me how to be... you know, a grown-up and how to make change happen and, you know, how to participate in our community in a really positive way. And so to be able to continue that, to continue her legacy is an honor. But, you know, one of the best things about my mom is that she never wanted me to be her. Mm. She always wanted me just to be me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm able to do that and, you know, support the causes that I love and, you know, carry her with me wherever I go, but still be myself.
What a loving, loving tribute. I mean, we should all be so lucky to have our children say what you've just said about your mom. I mean, that's just, you encapsulated it all. And of course, your book was launched last month, right around Mother's Day, which is sweet too.
Yes.
And how has the experience been for you?
It's been so wonderful. I was really afraid when the book first came out that, you know, I exposed quite a bit about myself. And, you know, I wasn't so sure how it would be received. But I've gotten emails from people all over the country telling me how my experience has affected them. And I've heard stories from people about, you know, their relationships with their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had one woman tell me that she read a section of my book to her mom and vowed to her mother that their relationship was going to change. And, you know, as a result of that, the two of them started talking and they've resolved issues that they never thought would be resolvable. So the fact that I get to be a catalyst for those kinds of conversations is absolutely incredible.
I would say, what an honor. How fabulous. So The Last Pilgrimage, My Mother's Life and Our Journey to Saying Goodbye, is available through the traditional methods and Barnes & Noble and Amazon and et cetera. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. So that is Linda Daly, and she's actually got some really kind of lineage here in Southern California. And again, whenever you want to suggest something, please go onto our website at mariasanchezshow.com, and you can email me, and we consider all suggestions. Hope you have a fabulous day. Look forward to visiting with you tomorrow. Stay cool if you're on the West Coast or the Western states.
Talking, so call Maria, her show is killer.